Chapter 4, France. The metro smelled strange, like a mix of sewer and candy. I'd always had an interest in maps and finding my way around places, so I challenged myself to find Jerome without using my phone's GPS. Sortie. The sign over the stairs I saw as I walked up to exit the metro looked old. Up on the little Parisian street, light poles with curly details, a smell of baguettes, and light chatter in a beautiful language, a feeling of excitement ran through my body. This was the first time of many where I was going to meet up with a complete stranger that would shape the story of my trip. A fellow jiu-jitsu enthusiast I'd gotten in touch with through my blog, who had invited me to come stay with him. "Wait for me at McDonald's on the corner," the text message on my phone from an unknown French number read. It took me a while to spot the golden arches. Jerome put his hand forward toward me. The H sound of his "how are you" had gotten lost somewhere in the accent. He was tall, had curly hair, and was wearing a leather jacket and a big smile. His English was heavily accented, but it was easy enough to understand with a bit of concentration once I got used to it. A week earlier, I had no contacts in Paris. After a short blog post about going there on a stopover before heading to southern France, I had 5. I was surprised at how easy it had been to get in touch with people. Suddenly, it seemed like I should have stayed there for more than one day. It was too late for that now. Jerome walked me to his apartment and handed me the keys. He had to go to work, so I would be on my own for the day. I spent some time just sitting on the mattress on the floor. I was really tired, since I had only gotten 4 hours of sleep before I had to get up and go to the airport. Too many thoughts in my head kept me awake. Now I had arrived at the first destination of my ambitious adventure, sitting in a stranger's apartment in the middle of Paris. A stranger that I had never met in my life before, who had just handed me the keys to his home. I was trying to wrap my head around the thought that I would not be back in my own bed for the next 4.5 months. It was difficult to understand. A text ticked in on my phone. It was from Arthur, a guy who had contacted me after I posted about my trip online. He had invited me to his gym that evening and said he had the day off in case I wanted to meet up and walk around the city a bit. I checked my emails on Jerome's computer before I headed out. 25 unread emails in my inbox with invitations to come and train. Arthur's English was good. He was studying the language and wanted to become a teacher. He had a peculiar mix of accents. Bits of British English, American, Irish, and French popped up in his sentences every now and then. He was wearing a hat, glasses, and a shirt that was too optimistic for the weather that day. I was wearing my big winter jacket and a scarf, taking no chances on the flu that had been haunting me for the past 2 weeks. That guy I fought in the Europeans, his nose looked so red, I was sure he had infected me. 5'2" and the flu. Arthur was a white belt who had been training for 1.5 years. It sounded like jiu-jitsu was already an important part of his life. He was training in a small gym nearby and suggested we could go there that evening. I felt more inclined to train with Jerome since he was so kind to host me for the night, so I'd have to make a decision. Fortunately, Jerome's gym had no jiu-jitsu class that evening, so we decided to all go together to Arthur's place and I could postpone the first issue of having to choose one gym over another on the trip. Jerome and I took the late evening metro for about 30 minutes to the gym. Arthur hadn't arrived yet, so we waited in the hallway of a public swimming pool. There was a karate class going on. Middle-aged men doing katas and a teacher who was instructing a girl wearing a brand new stiff black belt to thrust her hip forward as she delivered a punch. 10 meters away from us, a group of guys around my age started to gather. Every few minutes, another one would arrive and shake hands with everyone. They were loud, laughing, shouting, and fighting a bit for fun. I was pretty nervous at this point since it would be my first training in 3 weeks, not to mention my first training on the whole trip. I didn't understand anything of what they said and worried about my knee. I was going into a gym full of strangers and had no idea what kind of guys they were. Ripping up my injury at this point would be a catastrophe for the rest of my trip. The instructor introduced himself to us. His name was Olivier. He seemed friendly and welcomed us to his gym. He didn't speak much English. Every sentence was just a few words. As I tried to talk a bit with him in the changing room, I could feel the curiosity of the guys on the team changing into their gis. There were many eyes on me, sizing me up, and occasionally I could catch a few recognizable words in their conversations, such as Danois and Ceinture Marron. There was no doubt as to who they were talking about. I crossed my fingers, hoping that they would be nice to me and not just a bunch of hungry, competitive purple belts who would try to rip my limbs apart. We were running around the small room, which was 10 by 10 meters at best, matted walls all around the room and nothing else. Most guys didn't wear their belts, and some were only in shorts and t-shirt. In the corner, 3 guys had started doing MMA sparring on their own. The warm-up included around 100 push-ups. It made no sense to me to do so many before technique training and sparring, but it was not my class and I would respect the instructor no matter what he asked us to do. I was the guest after all. We did some light isolation sparring from site control and quarters. I went with Jerome, and after a few minutes, it was time to switch partners. I raised my hand, waiting for someone to pick me. A guy in a white gi, white belt, and a white rash guard approached me, and I shook his hand, introducing myself. He looked at me a little strangely. I figured he didn't speak any English. I asked him about his name, and he got an even stranger look on his face, like he was really puzzled. "I'm Arthur," he replied, in near-perfect English, wearing an awkward smile. Arthur looked different in a gi without his hat and glasses. I was embarrassed that I didn't recognize him at all after having walked around town with him all day. I was already confused with all the new faces, and the trip had just begun. Remembering thousands of people around the world was going to be somewhere near impossible. The accent and voice of the guy asking me to man dance was easy to recognize. I turned around and Jerome was smiling, putting his hand on my shoulder. I sat down to start with him in my guard. He was a big guy, bigger than he looked when he was hiding away in his leather jacket and scarf. It was my very first sparring round on the trip. I was nervous. I had made a plan of how I wanted to train while being on the road, but I was not sure if it would work. I knew that there would be a pretty high risk of injury if I went out and rolled hard with everyone I met in the gyms around the world. I had planned to visit more than 50 gyms, and an injury could potentially ruin the entire trip, so I had to be smart. I needed to pace myself in every single roll, never turning up intensity fully, and always trying to relax and rely on technique. Traveling is hard on the body. Flying, getting up early to go to airports, changing sleep rhythms, time zones, stress, change of food and climate. All factors that wear you out. Training hard with a body that is already under pressure is a potential recipe for disaster. Overtraining could put me out of the game completely for a period. Also, some people would definitely see me as a challenge stepping onto their mat. Their home. Going hard with them would only confirm the idea in their head that they were defending their pride or testing themselves against the challenger. The plan was to go light and hopefully break through their hard shell to make them relax and have fun with the training instead. If they didn't get the message, I would just let them submit me a few dozen times and then move on to the next training partner. I was not going out there to compare myself against anyone. We rolled for a few minutes and he went for the same deep half guard position several times. I defended by going for a kimura on his arm, but he was too strong and I couldn't break his grip. The third or fourth time it happened, his hand slipped right at the moment when I tried to break the grip, so accidentally I pulled his arm behind his back too fast. He screamed as his shoulder was overextended. I felt terrible. This was exactly what I hoped would not happen to myself, and now I was the bully. Fortunately, he could continue training. My knee felt fine during sparring, and I was really relieved that I had completed the first training with no problems. Everyone was nice to me, and there was no one trying to kill me. It had all been inside my head. Olivier ended the class like he had started it. Everyone up on a line doing 50 or so push-ups while he was counting. I never do push-ups, and I had no energy left in my arms after sparring, so it was really hard for me to follow along. I had to take many breaks, and probably only did a total of 10 or 15. When I got back to the apartment, it was already 11:30. I was exhausted from my first day on the road, but I had to wash my gi before I went to sleep. I hung it in the bathroom, hoping it would dry up during the night before I was taking the train down south to Montpellier in the morning. I was just about to go to sleep, but still standing by the window, looking out at the old city, wrapped in a rainy, misty night. The sky was dark, but over some of the rooftops to my left, there was a faint glow from the light coming from the Eiffel Tower. I struggled to keep my eyes open, but I was leaving already the next morning, so I decided I had to go see it. It was raining lightly as I walked through the city with my camera in one hand and a tripod in the other. No people were on the streets, only an occasional sound coming from the overground train in the distance. The neon lights from the brasserie reflected onto the wet streets. As I turned a corner, a huge golden light appeared in front of me. I had to stop for a second. When I was in Paris 10 years earlier, I had seen the Eiffel Tower in daylight together with a few thousand other tourists with cameras and maps in their hands. Now I was there all alone on a Monday night in the rain. I stood there for a few minutes in silence, looking at the tower, listening to the sound of the city sleeping. The usual buzz from the traffic was gone. All I could hear was the rain hitting my jacket and the little pools of water accumulating in the mud around my feet. I was looking for the perfect angle to capture the atmosphere of the place with my camera. I squatted, resting the camera in the palm of my hand, put my eyes in the viewfinder, and for the millionth time observed the world through that complex arrangement of glass and mirrors that felt like an old friend. Photography had always been a part of my life as long as I could remember. It was clear how I wanted the end result to look. Every detail of colors, composition, and light was right there inside my head. Now the art lay in extending my mind out through a mechanical device and capturing that exact expression of my imagination. My eyes quickly scanned through the little red numbers around the image, knowing by intuition that aperture, ISO, focal length, and exposure time were all set just right. I adjusted the zoom and moved my body a little to the left and up, positioning the lines and objects of the image. To be able to describe how I know when a photo is composed right would be impossible. It would be like asking a judo player to describe how he identifies the split second where the opponent is in the exact right position to be thrown through the air. There are too many details for the conscious brain to observe and register, so pure intuition takes over. Everything was set. My entire consciousness was focused on what went on inside the world of the little viewfinder. Full concentration. Breathe in. Wait. The raindrops around me seem to disappear. Click, click. The familiar sound of the mirror flipping, freezing an unimaginably short period of time in the universe to exist forever, had followed me through my entire life. It was comforting. Since the invention of the camera, a large part of my father's side of the family had been photographers. Some of the earliest memories I have are images of camera lenses in front of my face. For a time, long before digital photography, when people started shooting thousands of photos for every week-long vacation, I must have been a highly photographed child. The first camera I remember owning was a beautiful Nikon SLR with a small 35-75mm lens. It had belonged to my mythical grandfather in Australia, and I had admired it for years and years. It must have been around my 8th or 9th birthday when my father passed it on to me, neatly packed in a cardboard shoebox with a few pages from a newspaper wrapped around it. It was magical. The sounds of the mechanical parts working inside the camera when I pressed the buttons kept me awake in bed at night for hours. The feeling of the soft plastic and the cold metal on my fingers fascinated my young mind. My grandfather had actually used it at one point, and now it was mine to keep forever. The modern digital camera I had brought to capture that photo of the Eiffel Tower still somehow reminded me of my grandfather's. A quiet rush of excitement ran through my body. The first day of my trip had already been full of experiences, friends, and training. I had 139 to go, and I couldn't wait to see what the rest of the world would be like. I had been looking forward to the train ride down to Montpellier. I wanted to get into the traveling rhythm and not hurry anything. 3.5 hours through the landscape of France would definitely help with that. As a kid, I followed the Tour de France every summer, and I loved the landscape and small towns the cyclists passed through. My little brother and I got ourselves some bicycles, and we saved up to buy those cycling shirts they use in the tour. I remember we wanted our bikes to look a little cooler, so we spray-painted them yellow out on the parking lot. When we had raced each other in circles around our building for hours, our mother came home and saw that the concrete on most of the parking lot was bright yellow. We hadn't noticed, so we couldn't understand why she would be mad at us for that. When I was sitting in the train, I could feel an itching pain in my knee. It was almost like I could feel the bleeding inflammation inside. I tried to find a comfortable position to sit in, but it was difficult. My walk to the Eiffel Tower had cost me at least a few hours of sleep, and I was paying for that. My eyes were fighting to stay open. I didn't want to fall asleep and wake up in some city far away from Montpellier. Apparently, the beautiful Mediterranean city has a dark side. Thomas had been a victim of that just 4 days after he moved there from Denmark. He had walked on the street on the way to his first training session when, out of the blue, he had been hit in the head from behind. He fell over and 3 guys started kicking him for what must have seemed like forever. The violence in the area was scary. These people were not attacking their victims just to get their money. They were trying to seriously harm and injure them in the process. Thomas was kicked in the face, on the body, and in the groin again and again before they took everything in his pockets and ran away. When he got to his feet, he managed to stumble the last bit to the gym. He entered the door, and one can only imagine the look on people's faces there when they saw him. They took action right away. There was no time to wait. One of the guys training was a plastic surgeon and took Thomas through the back door of the hospital to fix the big cut on his face. The rest of the guys in the gym put on their shoes and ran out into the streets to try and find the attackers. They had no luck. Several people told me that it could be hard to get close to the French people and get to know them. Thomas took a shortcut, and from the first day, everyone knew who the new guy in the gym was. He had just found a very efficient but painful way to make new friends in France. I am sure he won't recommend it to others, though. I had a few hours to relax before we went to the gym. I was dead tired, but I had to get going with the project of doing as many training sessions as possible around the world. It was impossible to see what was going on inside through the damp windows of the gym. Thomas beeped a chip in his keychain on the little pad next to the door to unlock it. As we walked in, the first thing that hit me was the humidity. It was like getting punched in the face. There was no air conditioning, no ventilation, and all windows and doors were closed. I figured I could just as well get used to it, since I would be training some very warm places later on the trip. A guy was sitting on a cardio bicycle and shook our hand. It was Florent, the owner of the small gym. He was about my size, with black short hair, wearing black fight shorts and a black t-shirt. Thomas shook hands with a handful of guys as we walked through the room. He introduced me to some of them who tried a few words in English but with limited success. When the class started, we were 7 people on the mat. The coach was Francisco Nonato, a huge Brazilian guy. We started the warm-up, and a few minutes in, I realized I was witnessing another tourist special workout. Running, sprawling, jumping, rolling, shrimping, pummeling. We took turns jumping over our partner, then crawling through his legs, 20 times each as fast as possible. My knee started to hurt a bit, and it worried me. I also felt a very familiar pain in my left leg. 6 years earlier, I had gotten a herniated disc in my lower back from deadlifting that was pressing on the nerve to my left leg. Since then, I had designed my training and life around what I could and could not do. Running and sprawling was on the list of things I normally stayed away from, but being a guest in a gym, I would follow the training no matter what. The warm-up was brutal, and everyone around me was breathing heavily. Despite the exhaustion from lack of sleep, I was feeling fine. My breathing was still relaxed, and the few short breaks we had in between the drills allowed me to recover quickly. I was looking around at people fighting to keep up with the rest of the class. All those hard workouts in the gym back home were really paying off and had just saved me from dying on a jiu-jitsu mat in France only 2 days into my trip. I tried to roll with as many guys as possible. I had a round with Nonato, who must have been way over 130 kilos. It was like trying to grapple with a house. No matter what I did, I couldn't move him. The first roll with a black belt on the trip was in the books, and it wasn't a pretty one. One guy was smaller than me, and I outmatched him technically as well. I went slow, loosened up the game a bit, and allowed him to use his techniques instead of just crushing him. I took his back several times, caught him in a few submissions, and every time I let him escape. As the timer beeped, he asked why I didn't go harder on him. He punched his fist into the palm of his hand to symbolize what he meant, assisting his lack of English vocabulary. I didn't think it made any sense for me to just tap him out as much as I could. I wanted to play the game on his terms, not just get the win for myself. He seemed a little confused by why I would think like that. The way I keep progressing and developing my own game is that I have a short list of techniques hanging on my fridge, where I write down what I work on in everyday sparring. It is like a written agreement with myself that whenever I roll, I always try to go over those moves. It usually adds up to just 2 or 3 things I practice a year, and when I feel like I have them down, I cross them off the list and add new ones. I had made a little list of things I wanted to work on exclusively for the trip. Wrestling style sweeps from the guard, guillotine choke, defending myself in guard top, and a specific side control escape would be the only things I would have in mind no matter who I was rolling with. I had just caught the first few guillotines and pulled off the side control escape on one of the guys and couldn't wait to try repeat it over and over against anyone I was going to clap hands with around the globe. As we walked back home from the gym, Thomas told me that the warm-up was usually much easier. I told him about the 200 push-ups in Paris and we laughed at the similarities. I got a feeling that I would run into these warm-ups a few times more during my trip. In the morning, the weather was beautiful. I opened the balcony door to get some fresh air in. The sun was shining and there was a bus coming from the street below. I walked to the supermarket in the mall to find some lunch. The woman at the counter spoke to me in French. Bonjour, no carte, merci. I could guess pretty much what she was saying, and it was a good way to practice some basic phrases, as long as she didn't ask me about anything advanced like, do you come here often? There was a park next to the mall where I went to eat my cheap but not very exciting lunch. The sun was shining. It was the first time I had really felt the sun on my warm body for many months. People were sitting in little groups around the lawn. There was a small quiet lake in the middle of the park, surrounded by trees, most of them still bare from winter. A few had little green buds on them. Groups of old men were sitting around tables playing chess. A bunch of students had tied a rope between 2 trees and took turns trying to walk from one to the other without falling down. A guy was juggling with a football close to a young couple in love. A girl kissing her boyfriend goodbye. He was texting on his phone as she walked away, making a loud sound as her high heels stepped on the walkway made of stone. She was beautiful. I missed my own girlfriend. It was still difficult to grasp that I would not see or touch her for the next 4.5 months. The next day, I would fly to Bucharest to meet Robert. Dress warm, he had ended his last 3 emails, so I figured he really meant it. I sucked in the last moments of sunshine and warmth in the park, breathing the fresh air deeply through my nose. I was thinking about spring back home in Denmark and the smell of trees in bloom from the forest that I had lived nearby as a child. The first day of summer. I was bummed that I was going to miss it, but couldn't really complain about where I would be instead. I trained a few more times in a little humid gym with the tough Frenchmen. It was like I already knew them all there a bit better, and we had some great roles, even though many of the guys still didn't make any attempt at conversation. Florent was one of the few who seemed to know English pretty well. I fought this Polish guy at the Europeans. He was so strong. I think something must be wrong. I look behind him. Maybe there is 2 guys, no?